your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Shall call. Live you must and let to live. Fairly take and fairly give. Do what thou will if it harms none. By the magic of all, may it be done. Nine woods in the cauldron go. As above, so below. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. The opening song or music tonight was Ritual Drumming, and that was from the Dragon Ritual Drummers. And it just seemed to fit in with tonight's topic and guest. And for those of you who might have been a little logy tonight, hopefully it woke you up a little bit. All right, so Najah Lightfoot is an initiated member of a very private voodoo society in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I'll have her pronounce it when we start talking. But she's also a sister priestess of the Divine Feminine and an active member of the Denver pagan community. She keeps her magic strong through the practice of Kung Fu, the folk magic of hoodoo, pagan rituals, and her belief in the mysteries of the universe. She finds inspiration in movies, music, and the blue skies of Colorado, which is like something like 12 degrees there now. So I think she's freezing. but she's also a regular contributing author to the Llewellyn Almanac series. And she's with us tonight to talk about her new book, Good Juju. So Najah, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Marla. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you to all your listeners for being here on the show with me. I'm very excited to be here, and thanks again for this wonderful opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, explain, give them the name of the voodoo society, please, that I can't pronounce.
It's called La Source Ancienne en Faux, and it's located in the city of New Orleans, which is my spiritual home, even though I do live in Denver, Colorado, which I do love also very much. I'm blessed to live in the beautiful Mile High city of Denver, and we do have lots of snow on the ground, but I know it's warm in New Orleans, and it's Mardi Gras carnival season going on down there. So I feel really blessed to have, physically living here in Denver, but also spiritually having my my temple, my society, and really great friends and people in New Orleans as well.
Yeah, it's good to have people in every corner of the world if you can, because it makes life so much more interesting, for sure.
It does.
Now, the book is all about mojos and rites and spells and practices for the magical soul. When and how did you first discover your magical soul?
Oh, I've kind of always been a child of nature. We were discussing earlier before we got started that I did grow up in Southern Cal, came to Colorado when I was 17. I spent a lot of summers at the beach. I spent like my summers going to Disneyland.
yep, me too.
Yeah, I didn't live too far from Hollywood. I remember, riding the bus up to Hollywood with my cousins and being around, you know, you could see movies and films being filmed in LA. Mm-hmm. And I lived in LA during the 70s. I'm born in the 60s, but definitely a child of the 70s. And, you know, that's when all that, you know, you can believe in magic music. Seemed like every music mm-hmm. had some kind of spell or, you know, something yes. like that. So, you know, I've always been just kind of a magical person, and I've always had a deep affection for nature. Love butterflies, mm-hmm. looking at the stars, and any movies that talked about witches or spells or ghosts or anything like that. I was just always naturally drawn to. So I have to say, I've just pretty much just followed where my magical and spiritual path has led me all these many years.
Yeah, I think we all know it's in us, and sometimes we don't know what it is, but mm-hmm. eventually we get wise and follow the path and make it a lifestyle rather than just something that's in the back of our heads that we don't have a clue about.
Indeed. Yep, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're a practitioner of Kung Fu, the folk magic of hoodoo, pagan rituals, and your belief in the mysteries of the universe, which I really like. And the book is about using simple magical practices that don't interfere with any religions or belief systems. And I think that's an important point to make, because so many people are afraid of stepping out of their comfort zones and trying anything different for fear that they'd be unfaithful to or betraying of their personal religions and beliefs. And I personally don't think of learning and growing as a betrayal. I see it more as something that works, and it's just adding things so that we evolve into the best we can be. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was one of my main objectives in writing my book is, one, you know, I want to share authentically things, knowledge, and experiences that have worked for me. And I always like to tell people, you know, I'm not a speaker for any organization, sect, cult, religion, or anything. I just like to share what I know to be true for me and what has helped me. And, you know, I truly believe that everyone has their own path to the divine, their higher power, however that works for them. And what I really want to pass along is just tools, people who are, you know, wanting to learn about magic or magical spirituality, as I like to call it, as an enhancement to their practices they already have. Like mm-hmm. you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater to craft a mojo or, you know, blow a kiss to the full moon. It's an enhancement. Mm-hmm. All these things can work together. And I know that's been true for me. You know, I do a lot of different things, as you saw in my bio. And they all work together for me. And I don't, you know, I truly believe it's more about expanding your consciousness and bringing different things in that work than, you know, feeling trapped by something that doesn't work for you and feeling like, oh, you have to do this way. You know, I'm, mm-hmm. I like to experiment, and, you know, there's a lot of things. Some things may work for you and some things may not. And that's part of the journey of your growth as a magical spiritual practitioner.
Mm-hmm. And people confuse spirituality with religion a lot. And I mean, when people are religious, yes, they are spiritual, but it's not the same thing as, you know, when we talk about a spiritual life. We're not talking about religion. We're talking about, I think, inner selves and individuality and things like that. And one of the topics that you wrote about in the book is maintaining your magical individuality. So let's delve a little bit deeper in that, if you will. How important is it?
Oh, I think it's very important. I mean, I believe that we all are social creatures, and that's why fellowship is important. You know, one thing that's great about showing up to, you know, a big pagan event, or when I get to be with my house members in New Orleans, I get to have fellowship and I'm with people that are of like mind. But I still have to maintain a path of what works for me. And, you know, I did want to touch on what you had brought up earlier. Like, there is always seems to be a lot of confusion around, you know, what is hoodoo, what is voodoo. And so, you know, I like to just always clarify for people that hoodoo is a folk magic practice. That's something anybody can do. It's like learning, you know, it's spell works. It's old time remedies from your grandma or your auntie or, you know, whatever you know, want to call that. And voodoo is a religion, and that is something that requires, you know, initiation. And there's, you know, the leadership of a mambo or a hugon, which coordinates to a priest or a priestess or your pastor or your minister. So the two are very different things. So I just like to say, you know, I do have that as my religious path, along with my deep abiding faith in the divine feminine and the mother goddess, and then practicing hoodoo, and it all works fabulously together. And so I think as you go along, sometimes when people are starting out, there's so much information and so easy to get overwhelmed. But I think you always have to check in with your gut, you know, and or use your tools of divination, take it into prayer and, you know, say, is this right for me? Should I do this? If it doesn't feel good, or the people that you're with, you know, in your magical groups as you go along, if they're not supportive of you or you don't feel validated or it doesn't ring true for you or being asked to do things that are contrary to your nature, then that's when you have to maintain your own individuality and use your discernment to say, well, you know, maybe this isn't the right group for me. Maybe this isn't working, and just carry on.
Yeah. And that, but also, I had a really good point made at one point. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't try things, because it's really important. And a few years ago, I was at a pagan festival. And it was on 9/11. And so they were going to do a special ritual for 9/11 for peace. And so, you know, people could go or didn't have to go. But I went, my friend went, and we had her mother with us, who was in her 90s and a devout Catholic. And so as we went into the room for the ritual, of course, you know, they saged everybody, and she didn't flinch. I mean, she was in a wheelchair, and, you know, they were kind of saging around her, and she actually stood up from the wheelchair to let them do that. And then we all formed this huge circle, and whenever they started the ritual and we had to repeat things back, this woman did exactly what the rest of us did. She didn't balk for one moment, because I think she was enjoying doing something that was different, but it touched her spiritually.
Sure.
And that just kind of, you know, if somebody who is a devout anything and in their 90s and is just willing to jump in and be part of something else without fear and without worry, I thought that was, I was kind of like getting teary-eyed watching it, because it was kind of amazing, you know?
Yeah, well, and it also sounds like she is very grounded in her faith. You know, I've been to things where they've been in churches and people have asked me, are you going to go in there? And I'm like, why wouldn't I go in there? It's a building.
Yes, I know. It's like they think we're going to get holy water thrown at us.
Like light up or something. You're like, yeah, it's okay. I can go in there. It's all right. Like, I'm here for, you know, your event. You invited me to come. So, you know, of course I'm coming. Yeah, you know, and that's also part of being mature and being realistic and being grounded about who you are and what you believe, and also being, you know, kind and respectful of other people. You know, she was there at this pagan event, she came in and she had the sage. That didn't mean she was going to go home, but who knows? You know, but that, you know, I think that's really good to be, you know, open-minded and to be courteous and respectful when you are attending someone else's event, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, you know, make a scene or whatever and say, this isn't mine. Or, you know,
it was really heartwarming. It really was. The other thing I want to talk about is that you touch on the subject of solitary practice versus groups and covens. And so I want to talk about that for a minute, because there are positive and negative aspects in both. And some people have more of a group mentality more than others. But strangely enough, as a solitary myself, I found that over the years, and I don't know if this is necessarily the case with others, but in my personal inner circle, it has slowly and very unintentionally begun to include like-minded magical folks of all different traditions. I mean, some belong to covens, others are solitary, but we all pretty much have the same general mindset and do learn from each other on a one-to-one basis rather than a group. And that just kind of makes me think that the universe always ties up loose ends and gives us what we need, even if we don't realize that we do need it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's room in your life for both. As I get older, I do appreciate the fellowship of being with like-minded people. But, you know, I'm also a very solitary person. Writing books is a very solitary practice.
Oh, yes, it is.
You know, you spend a lot of time alone. So I do like to, you know, gather with like-minded people, and I enjoy both. I mean, I'm a very social person, but I also have a very introverted side as well. And so I think there's good things to be gained from both. And especially when you're on the path of practicing magical spirituality, you learn a lot of things when you do things on your own, but you also learn a lot of things when you do things in groups. Right. See things from perspectives and get ideas and information that might not come to you when you're alone. Although sometimes the focus that you can have on your magic when you're alone, you know, you're not interrupted, you don't have to check in with anyone. So I think both experiences are good and valid as you journey along, you know, you journey along the path of magical spirituality. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about intuition. And I'm going to, like I told you, I'm going to be jumping around topic to topic because you know, there's so much good stuff in this book. So just, you know, I'm not gone crazy. I'm just, you know, trying to focus. But how important is it for all of us, not just pagans, but everybody, to listen to our intuition? And how do we know the difference between thoughts and intuitive guidance? That's always a question I've gotten before.
Well, I think like when, you know, for me personally, when I'm tapping into my intuition versus just thinking about something, I actually get a physical feeling. And then I see manifested in the universe like a sign, or I'll hear a song or see a word, or something will happen. And I'll go, oh, I mean, it's an immediate knowing. That's what I like to use my intuition as, like, I know, okay, that's true. Versus where when I'm just in my, you know, conscious mind and I'm thinking about something, I'm going back, I'm weighing things. Is this right? Is that right? But intuitively, it's a knowing. You feel it inside yourself, like, okay, you know that was the right thing. That happened to me today. I was reading some cards for myself and I turned over a card and went, oh, okay. I guess I don't have to ask any more questions. It's been answered. Okay.
Yeah. Now see, and I know a lot of people that don't read for themselves at all because they don't trust themselves to not look into something in a different way, or just trying to change the meaning to suit them instead of actually looking at the card and getting the true meaning of it.
Well, it's crazy because, you know, I have such respect for people who are card readers and can do divination for other people. And I'm just the opposite. I can only do it for myself. I hardly ever get readings from other people. But that's just me. Yeah. You know, that's just not my gift. So, and I have tons of decks that, you know, I go back and forth with. And, you know, and I don't do it very often. I spend a lot of time with a daily spiritual practice that, you know, I did outline in my book. And so pretty much if I'm like drawing a card for myself, it's not a regular thing. That's kind of like when I'm like, I really want to check in and see, you know, is there, you know, a little bit more information I can get about the question I have in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So do you use tarot or oracle decks or what?
I use both.
Okay.
Right now I'm actually using from a wonderful person. There's a deck called the New Orleans Oracle by Fatima Emoji. And it's a beautiful, beautiful card deck. And so that's my go-to deck for right now. But I have tons of decks, Oracle cards, tarot cards. I have, my favorite pendulum. I have a pendulum board. Mm. Yeah. Yep.
You're loaded for bear, yes, just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So many things. Yes, so many trinkets and wonderful things that help us get through the day. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely.
All right, so now I'm going to jump over to hoodoo in general, and mojos in particular. I mean, because the word mojo is both a verb, as in get your mojo on, I think,
right?
As well as a noun, as in referring to mojo bags. So depending on a person's belief system, mojo bags can be referred to as spell bags or medicine bags or charm bags or gri-gri bags,
yep.
Even prayer bags. So. Sure. So what are they, simply, in case nobody's ever heard of one by any of those names, what are they and what is their function?
Well, quite simply, it's a tangible item that's usually made of cloth. And inside that cloth, there's usually a prayer that's been written. There could be herbs inside of there. There could be coins, there could be stones, there might be string, there could be what we call personal concerns, which could be, it could be hair, it could be fingernails, it could be a photograph, and then usually it's blessed with your prayers and your intentions, and then we get them to work in, which means we usually pass them through a flame and then bless them with an oil, and then you carry them with you or keep them in a safe place. And mojos are made for all different kinds of conditions. People make them for love, for prosperity, for protection, for safe travel, which is my favorite mojo to make. I love making safe travel mojos. And so it's, you know, you can call them a talisman. You know, they're usually something, though, that once they're made, and you have one, it's not anything that you share with someone or you allow anybody else to touch it. It's a blessed piece of tangible magic that you keep with you and carry with you, and that is sacred for you.
And I'm so glad you brought up safe travel mojo, because you fell right into it, which is great. I want you to tell the story about your safe travel mojo that you wrote about in the book. Because I think we have to believe in things in order for them to work. And, well, it's a great story. So I'm leaving you to tell it.
Oh, well, so I have made safe travel mojos for myself and for my husband. And we've had the same ones. He has one. I have one. And we had them for years. And we take them wherever we go. And several years ago, we were in London. And unfortunately, my husband became very ill. He became critically ill. And we were traveling, trying to get to our Airbnb in London. And I had I always carry my safe travel mojo with me. And we get out of the cab and go to our Airbnb. And I realized I don't have my backpack. My backpack had everything in it. Now, I had my passport with me, but anybody who travels, you know, your backpack is your luggage. You might have other luggage, but everything that you need, you keep in your backpack. And so I think any normal, rational person, even a true believer of anything, you have moments of doubt. And it had been a long journey. And I just kind of sat down in this Airbnb and started crying and was, you know, like, what the hell good is this safe travel mojo? I've lost my backpack. I'm here in London and all I had was my little phone. And I was trying to, like, call a cab driver and, you know, how do I report this? And seriously, I still get choked up about it. Within about 10 minutes, there was a knock on the door and it was the London cabbie, and he had brought my backpack to me, and my husband and I we were so emotional. And he said, you know, I said, oh, thank you so much. And he just said, well, I just want you, you know, how can we repay you for this? And and he said, you know, just tell people that this is what London cabbies do. And I said, thank you. And one of the lines in the safe travel prayer that I was, you know, blessed to be able to write in my book is, in times of need, may kindly strangers come to your aid without stint. And there he was. He brought it back to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just, it's a lovely story. And, you know, happy endings are always important too. But Yeah, I've read that and I kind of got the chills and I thought that was really, really nice.
Me too. Yeah, it made me, you know, even though we'd had them for all those years, that was a really dire situation and we needed our things. And thankfully, you know, just ended on that my husband recovered, everything's fine. And my Safe Travel Mojo, it worked.
And that's validation. I mean, nothing better than that kind of validation. And and now you don't have to be a practitioner of hoodoo or a witch or anything else to make a mojo bag.
Oh, no. Yeah, anybody can make one.
And so I just thought I'd take the opportunity since tomorrow is Valentine's Day and some people might be interested. Can you give everyone a quick lesson on how to put together a Valentine or love mojo?
Yeah, let's see. Well, you'd have to be working pretty fast and furious since it's the night before. So I would just say, so off the top of my head, you'd use red flannel. You know, we use flannel in hoodoo for our mojo bag. So I would get some red flannel. Just needs to be a little square. And you tie it up like a hobo bag. So in there, I would just get, I'd write a prayer for love, you know, or, you know, if you're seeking love, you know, I'd write a prayer to, you know, bring love in accordance with your highest good into your life. Or if you have love in your life, you want to bless your relationship, I'd write a prayer of gratitude and thanksgiving on a piece of paper. We call those petition papers. And in the way I was taught, we use brown paper, and it's pretty simple to get a brown paper bag. You know, just people pretty much have brown paper bags from the grocery store, and you tear a square from that, and you tear the edges of the brown paper to make sure all the edges are torn, and I'd write the little prayer on there. And then since this is quick, everybody usually has olive oil in their house. So once you write your prayer of love on your petition paper, I would anoint that prayer in a 5-spot pattern with olive oil. And what that means is you put a drop of olive oil in all the 4 corners going clockwise. And then you put a little dot of oil in the middle. And if you had some rose petals at your house, I would put some little rose petals in there. Or if you didn't, I would draw some red hearts on there because this is pretty quick. And then you find you need some white thread or a white piece of rope, like something to tie it up to cord. So then you fold that paper towards you to bring that love into your life. And then you take a piece of white thread that you've knotted, put 9 knots in that, and you tie that around a little paper and put that in your little flannel square. I would get a red candle if you have one. If you don't, a white candle works, or whatever candle you've got, and bless that candle, anoint it with some olive oil, and then fold up pull the squares of the flannel up together so it looks like a little bag, and then tie it up with your cord. And then I would light your candle and hold your mojo in your hand and say a prayer over it, and then pass it through the flame 3 times, and then blow your breath onto your mojo, and then it's set to working. And then you can carry it or you could gift it to someone, and that would be a really quick, fast love mojo.
Thank you. And I've got a question from the chat room. It says, if you feel that the reason you made your mojo bag is no longer necessary or relevant, what do you do with it? Do you have to dispose of it in a certain way at all?
Well, you know, I tend to keep mine and then put them into, you know, if I'm making a new one. But if you didn't want to keep it anymore, I think I'd have to have a little bit more information. Was that because something negative happened to you or you don't like it? Because when we're doing hoodoo, I can kind of answer my own question. If your mojo worked for you and you liked it, but you just don't want to carry it anymore, you would dispose of it either by burying it in your backyard if you have one, or you could put it in the bottom of a potted plant, or, you know, safely tuck it away in a drawer. you know, because you just keep that magic with you. Now, if it something happened to it and you didn't want it anymore, the best way to dispose of it would be to put it in a brown paper bag and then drop it in the middle of a crossroads. And the way you do that is a crossroads is any place where two roads form a T. And I would just put it in a paper bag and drive through a crossroads and toss it out the window and keep on going and don't look back.
Make sure no police are behind you when you toss it either. It's a two-step process. Make sure the coast is clear and then keep going.
And just keep going. And then if you really didn't like it and you were really like, this mojo is not working for me, which I've never really heard of anybody having that issue. But, you know, but we do dispose of things that aren't working for us. I mean, if you were really, disturbed with it, you could go past a railroad track and throw it on the railroad tracks and keep on going. Because, you know, when you see a railroad, it has the word crossroads on the sign. You toss it on the track and keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
And the train would run over it, and it would surely be done.
That's for sure. all right, we're going to take a break in just 1 second, but I do have a quick question that you can answer beforehand. They want to know, is the word mojo a shortened form of a longer word, or what's the genesis of the word?
Well, it has been said that it's short for, like, mojo hand, because, you know, you could fit in your hand, the palm of your hand, a mojo bag. But other than that, I just know it as the word mojo.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a short 2-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about a subject that I get questioned about all the time, which is protection magic. So sit tight and we will be back.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Line!
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it's Marla. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the archive podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron Para-X and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Yes, welcome back. And my guest tonight is Najah Lightfoot. And as I mentioned before the break, we're going to be talking a little bit about protection magic because, you know, I think everybody on this planet has some sort of protective item in their pockets or around their neck or hanging over their beds or whatever. Some people wear a crucifix, some wear St. Christopher's medal, pentagram, talisman, Star of David, whatever. any number of items. And I had more. but you wrote in the book right off the bat that it's okay to protect ourselves. I mean, it's important. How important is it to work with defensive magic on a regular basis, and not just at the last minute when something comes up and you're sure you're going to need it?
Every day. So I like to keep it real and dial it back. So I put protection magic on the same par as you don't go to bed and leave your doors unlocked unless you live in a really good, close community. You don't park your car and leave your doors unlocked. You close your windows. You know, you check your house before you go to sleep. It's the same thing with protection magic, because you just never know what's going to happen to you in a day. I mean, you know, you can wake up in the morning feeling great, and by the end of the day, you know, something could have happened, and it doesn't mean that, you know, we won't run into situations that may be trying for us, but at least we've done what we could. It's the same thing as, you know, I get up every day and I have a morning ritual. We say our prayers. We don't go a day without saying our prayers or doing our morning ritual. So why wouldn't you, use your protection magic on a daily basis?
Yeah, that makes good sense. I think people are maybe afraid to do something more. I mean, all right, a St. Christopher medal is great. You believe in that medal. I mean, you could wear anything around your neck. If you believe in it, it will work. That's what I believe, and that's what I was taught. Wearing things around your neck is a good thing. And the other thing, though, is you just don't want to protect yourself. You want to protect your environment.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, all those things you've said, you know, people have in their homes, gargoyles on their front porch, bury things in our yards.
I got those things. Yeah. Okay.
You know, you've got bracelets on, earrings on, you know, there's all kinds of spiritual oils out there you can buy, soaps you can wash with. You know, I'm a true believer in Florida water. We love Florida water for everything. You anoint your doors, your windows. Now, you know, you can do those kind of things where you're actually scrubbing down your home or your business, on special occasions. I just, you know, we just finished, which was a wonderful experience for me. We just came off of celebrating the Chinese New Year, Year of the Metal Rat. And I'm happy to say I'm a metal rat. It was really great this year. I really followed it. And the lunar celebration lasts for 2 weeks. So for 2 weeks, every day I was lighting incense and a candle, and it was just nice. Awesome. And then I was throwing Happy New Year salt that I got from one of my really good metaphysical stores here in Denver out my front door every day for 2 weeks. I did that every day. And then I made a little track of, like, how did that day go? What were all the things that happened during the Chinese New Year celebration as I celebrated it, just to observe how things went. And I just did that in conjunction with, you know, my normal prayers and morning rituals. So, things, you have to keep it real. You know, things happen in the world, and you should learn how to protect yourself and use your protection magic, whatever you're comfortable in doing. And as you grow in, you know, strength, knowledge, and power, you just kind of layer it up, as you said.
Yeah, and the simplest way, I mean, for people to do it is just envision that white light around you, around your house, around whatever you want to protect, your car. I mean, that's, you know, the first baby step, but it works.
Yes, it does. It does work. It's like putting a lock and a key. It just makes you feel more confident, and then you don't have to really think about it. You know, you get up in the morning, if you're a morning person, or you work nights when you come home, or before you go to sleep, or in my book, I talk about setting up altars. I talk about, you know, lots of different things that you can do to protect yourself and just keep yourself grounded. And I think it's necessary. I don't think anyone should feel, bad because they want to protect their home or their domain or their family, their friends and loved ones. I think it's a natural instinct to want to protect your loved ones or your home or your, you know, things that you own. I don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah, it's an adjunct actually to prayer. I mean, you pray for people.
Exactly.
So, you know, just throw that in there, you know, whatever you feel. I mean, it's because in this society, you don't know what happens when you step out the door anymore.
You sure don't.
You know, and so it's always good to kind of have that protection around you in whatever form that you feel, because it's just going to make you not get as scared, because it is a scary world out there. I mean, and it's just a shame, but.
Well, and I think too, as a practitioner, you know, you start out doing simple things, but it's like things build in power over time. It's like when you go to sacred spaces, why do you feel that power and energy? Because people have been going there for decades, you know, praying, putting out their intentions for protection or connection with their higher power in that same spot. Well, you too are that walking vessel of energy. And if you're doing a ritual or something, a practice that grows in strength and power over time, you too are building up those layers around you that you just, you know, just become second nature to you that you might not even realize, kind of like, you know, going through an intersection and just missing somebody, like, you know, like, wow, you know, you just don't think about it. So it continues to build as you continue to put the time and effort into it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm reading things going on in the chat room, and my often partner in crime, Tim Shaw, just put in that he actually has pieces of a broken tombstone in the back of his SUV, and it's a very neat protection ritual that he does.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's a great thing. I mean, you know, graveyard dirt, and especially if it's from, you know, people that you love or someplace that is special to you, that's a wonderful talisman of protection. You know, why not?
Yeah, well, he just said that eventually it'll be placed in the four corners of the new house that he's moving into.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So and he explained, because people obviously that are listening to the podcast aren't seeing the chat room, but he just explained that the essence of the spirit will help protect the property.
Indeed. Yep.
We know this. All right. So one of the things that you were talking about was crossroads a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of places to work this type of magic. And one of the places is a crossroad. And you actually managed to do that at a crossroad smack in the middle of Philadelphia. Now, when I think of crossroads, I envision some quiet place out in the country, not in a busy, noisy city. So I want to hear more about this. Why Philadelphia, and how the heck did you manage doing it?
Well, you know, when you think back to this magic, this folk magic practice that's so dear to my heart, when you're talking about hoodoo, you have to go into the mindset of where it comes from. So first of all, you know, it's the magic of the people who didn't have, you know, at their wherewithal, you know, to contact a lawyer or an attorney or some, you know, person in the high levels of society for their help. And it also comes, you know, from the tradition of enslaved Africans. It also mixes in with European peasants and some Native American practices. So you're talking about people who were marginalized and really were attuned to the earth and their practices. So, you know, this work is really like you have to put yourself in this rural state of mind. So, you know, if you lived in the country, of course you could like walk out to this crossroad and there wouldn't be anybody there. And, you know, you could do all this work in secret or at the dawn. But most of us, you know, and I'm one of them, I'm an urban person. I live in a city. And I was traveling and I was studying hoodoo. And one of the things I needed to do was I needed to take myself to a crossroad. So I have found when you get serious about your magical practice and you're really working with spirit, you kind of enter into this zone where you get this feeling like, okay, I'm stepping into a magical practice right now. And when you're serious about it and you've connected with your higher power and you ask for your protection and guidance and you set about to do this work, you kind of walk in this like cloak of invisibility. And I was in Philadelphia. And so another thing that, you know, I like to stress is that is work does take time and commitment. And so before I was on a business trip, so before I had to be at my job, I was up at the crack of dawn, and I had the day before scoped out, because I like to always, you know, people have to do things in a safe way. You like to go scope out where you're going to do your magic before. So you don't show up there blind. Without knowledge of the environment. And I had seen this crossroads and I'm like, I'm going. I have to go. I must do this because I have to, you know, I have to sincerely do this. So I got up, I think it was like 5 o'clock in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. And I walked out of my hotel room and I walked down the street. There was hardly anybody out there. Nobody's paying you any attention. And I stepped into the crossroads in the bustling city of Philadelphia and, and did my work. And it was thrilling. It was thrilling, I have to say. I still remember it.
Wow. I mean, I burst out laughing when I read that because I just, you know, my mind went to, you know, you're standing in the middle of, you know, a busy street and cars are whizzing by you and you're still doing your thing and it's working and, you know.
Yeah, but it was early in the morning, and that's the thing about crossroads work. When you're doing crossroads work, you're either out there early in the morning before the sun is rising or as the sun rising, or you're out there at midnight. So you're in the crossroads doing work at times when there aren't really a lot of people going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And just looking at the chat room, and Hitman lives in Philadelphia, and he said, you may want to rethink that today. Yeah, Philly might be different now or whatever. That's funny. All right. So, all right, we were also talking, about the gravestone that Tim drives around with. You're talking about magic in the graveyard, and you wrote about that in the book, and you say that type of work isn't for the faint of heart or someone who is a bit lackadaisical or callous. And I think lots of people believe, thanks to Hollywood, that working in a graveyard means digging up bodies, defacing graves and things like that. But that's not anywhere near the truth. And as you wrote, if you respect the graveyard, it will respect you. And in many cases, people go to graveyards where their ancestors and loved ones are buried and practice there, right?
Yes. I mean, like when you said that, defacing graves and digging up, I actually had a visceral reaction to that and kind of mm-hmm. went like, oh gosh, that's just like so far from, you know, what, you know, I'm talking about with graveyard work. And like I said, going back to the origins of hoodoo, you know, in rural communities and you know, the old timey, people knew where their ancestors were buried. You know, your graveyard was just down the street. It wasn't, you know, surrounded by a fence. You could go there. Personally, I have always found great peace in graveyards and cemeteries. You know, a lot of graveyards and cemeteries were built like as parks because they wanted people to come and be with their ones who have passed over and have time to be in quiet places. So, you know, when you're doing graveyard work, you do enter with that reverence and respect and love and appreciation in your heart. And you're certainly not going there as if like, oh, you know, you're some badass person and you're just going to go into the cemetery and do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. No, that's not going to work for you. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. No, you're going there. And when I say it's not for the faint of heart is because like, you know, if you're going there to do work to gather graveyard dirt or leave something so that the spirits of the dead are going to help you, you better be serious about it. You know, you don't want to disrespect the dead in any way, you know, and you don't want to be, you know, being disrespectful of places where people are buried because it is sacred.
Yes, it is. And you talked about collecting or graveyard dirt and working with it. How does one properly collect it? And what's some of the uses of it?
Well, first of all, when I'm going to the graveyard to do work, the very first thing I do is when I pass through the gates of the cemetery, I always have some coins in my hand and I always toss some coins out my window to the keeper of the graveyard. Those, the spirits who watch over the gates of the graveyard, and just to thank them in advance for letting me pass through the gates and allowing me to do the work I've come there to do. Now, if you know you have relatives or loved ones in the graveyard and you're going there to collect graveyard dirt, you can go to their graveyard and talk to them and tell them of your plight. And if you know what some of their favorite things are, you can ask permission to take some of the graveyard dirt and then, you know, you leave an offering. If you don't know anyone, you can ask spirit to lead you. A lot of times nowadays, I mean, there's just this, you know, wonderful website that you can look up graves. You can find where certain people are buried in a graveyard, and you can go there and you can ask their permission. You can tell them why you're there, what you need to do. And then you just, I mean, when you're going to get a little bit of graveyard dirt, you know, you're not like digging like, you know, a hole with a shovel. You're just gathering like pretty much like a couple tablespoons because graveyard dirt is powerful. Yeah. So you just take what you need. You do it quick. You say thank you so much. You leave an offering. That could be whiskey. Could be a cigar. That could be food, money. But you leave something, you know, of your heart sincerely, and you thank that person. And then you honor them for the work you've done at the graveyard by telling them that you will come back and thank them for allowing you to take their graveyard dirt to use in your spell. You take your graveyard dirt and you go home from a different way you came to the cemetery. You don't look back. And then after you've used your graveyard dirt, either in a protection mojo or to lay around your house, and you've seen, you know, time has passed, go back to the cemetery and leave some flowers upon that grave or clean it off or tell that person, you know, who's passed over, thank you so much for allowing me to take some of your graveyard dirt and for the work you did for me and my family or myself. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's really, it's important. And the question, she said, where her parents are, there's also a pet cemetery. Oh. Would anyone ever go to a pet cemetery to do graveyard work?
You know, I don't know why you wouldn't if you were trying to work with the spirit of an animal. I personally have never been to a pet cemetery to do work. But, you know, if my pet was buried there, I could see that. Or if you, you know, there are people who have really deep animal intuitive skills. Mm-hmm. There's a whole section of, you know, magic of people who work with the spirit of animals. I certainly could see that. You could leave a bone or a treat or a collar or, yeah, I mean, that's very exciting. I like that.
Yeah, I never thought of that either. But, yeah, especially if it was, you know, one of your own. And as you said, you know, you just don't go to anybody's grave and take the dirt because you don't know what type of person that was. And you don't know, maybe they're ticked off for being on the other side and they'll kick your butt, you know. Yeah. So yeah, always be careful about whose dirt you pick up. That's, it sounds funny, but you know.
Yeah, and do your research, but, or you know, you can allow spirit to guide you when you walk into the graveyard if you don't know anyone, and you can sincerely ask in prayer to please lead me to, you know, a grave that is willing to help me, and then go sit with it for a while. See how you feel. I mean, one of the things that I really want to say is that magic takes time. We're living in a culture where everybody thinks, oh, you know, just tomorrow I'm just going to up and go to a graveyard. Well, no, I don't think so. Do you have a spiritual practice? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Have you done some magic along the way? Do you know how you feel? Do you know how these things work? Have you developed a spiritual foundation? Are you in relationship with a higher power? I mean, I always run everything through my higher power. And for me, it's the Lua and the goddess. And so, you know, you just don't go out willy-nilly on your own. And that is how people find themselves in, you know, bad and messy situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about education and knowing what you're doing. And I think that's really important because some people think they know it all and they don't even try to learn.
Exactly.
And that, yeah, that's the scary part because that's where people get really tied up in knots and in danger too.
Well, and I like to say, you know, we all love the movies and everything. There's a reason why, especially like in the Tarot, the hermit is an old man or it's the old witch or, you know, mm-hmm. the old person. Mm-hmm. Why are they so powerful? Because they've been at it a really long time.
That's right. We're getting older by the minute and time is flying really quickly, especially during this hour. So, I mean, the book covers so many topics that it would take several more hours to talk about each one. But I, as I mentioned to you before, and I'm not kidding, I really love the book. And I want you to let everybody know where they can find you, find out more about you, your books, if you have any events coming up. This is your time to shine.
Well, I'm really active on social media, so you can find me under Najah Lightfoot on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. You can find my book, Good Juju, and thank you so much to everyone who's bought my book and for listening to me on your show. Thank you, Marla, so much for having me. My book is available on Llewellyn.com, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, so pretty much everywhere, you know, books are sold. I am excited. I have coming up in July, I'm going to be a headliner at the Mystic South Conference in Atlanta. Mm. So I'm very excited about that. I'll be in Atlanta in July. And then my other big news is I am under contract and I'm writing the second book in the Good Juju series.
Oh,
so
wow.
Very excited. We're going to go deeper. So I'm very excited about my second book.
And also you do a lot of, as I said before, a lot of the part of the Llewellyn almanacs as well.
Yes, and I do. I just turned in my spells for the 2021 Spell a Day Almanac, and that'll be out in July of this year.
Yeah, I mean, if people want to know more about all that, they can go to Amazon.com and just type in your name, and there's a whole lot of books there. And I can't wait till your second book comes out, but I'm going to say if you'd like to come back anytime before that, because we know that's going to take a year or so.
Yes.
You're more than welcome because
there's
so many things that we can talk about and so many interesting things that people should really know, you know, whether they're pagan or non or whatever. I mean, it's just all, as we said earlier, it's all about growing and expanding our horizons and learning. And that's the bottom line there.
Indeed. Well, I would love to come back, Marla. It's been wonderful. Wonderful time talking with you. It's been really great. I've truly enjoyed it.
Well, my pleasure. And thank you so much for being here. And I also want to thank everybody that's in the chat room listening live, or those that are listening live out of the chat room, or those that will be listening on the podcast, which will be up tomorrow sometime on the YouTube channel and a dozen other places, Facebook and all kinds of iTunes and wherever. So anyway, guys, thank you for joining us. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.